Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Friday edition of the show. I was trying to hit a new level with that what's up today because the
Nailed
Canucks
it.
Hit a new level in the playoffs last night in a massive Game 5 victory against the Edmonton Oilers. All right, I'm not even doing my reads here. Let's get into this. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Drancer, you're here for the next 2 hours, then you're off to Edmonton to cover game 6. What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm my bags are packed, I'm ready to go.
All right,
but
you're
no
leaving on a jet plane.
What a wonderful game. Like, what just what a wonderful night of playoff hockey. The energy in that building was phenomenal. The drama, the flow, the circus nature of what was Vancouver's signature playoff performance to this point, 11 games into the playoffs. That was their best performance. I'd argue that it was the first game in this series that they really took over, right? That they really dictated and controlled play throughout. I guess aside from a sloppy-ish first 12 minutes where too many blue line giveaways were feeding too many odd man rushes against for the Oilers. They overcame five Oilers power plays, really four, because they got a pretty early makeup call on one of them, a well-deserved makeup call. They overcame some really suspect officiating in that game, some really weird calls, and you know, the lineup juggle worked, especially, you know, it worked like errors and omissions for us, right? We spent a solid 10 minutes on the fourth line, which was probably more than any other
program. You were like, this is stupid. We shouldn't talk about the fourth line this much.
I 100% was like, I was like, they probably won't play that much.
They're not. And I even was like, yeah, who knows how much Neil Zaman will play, how often they'll be out there as a unit. And then it was like, they're doing great.
Not just doing great. They swung the game.
Yeah.
Like, Phil DiGiuseppe and his baby legs, playoff hero. It was a performance so good that you could feel a tingling in the reaches.
Okay, all right. I don't need that image here. Come on, man.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And then, you know, so you sort of put it all together, and it's like the Canucks, honestly, probably on form, deserve to win by two or three. It was really some posts. Here's the other thing I don't want to hear. If the Oilers had gotten goaltending like that, Pickard was a mess. Every rebound was into the slot. He got beat three times, and it didn't show up on the scoreboard. You know, like, if you thought Artur Shelov
was
lucky at all in game three.
Pulled off the goal line, similar to the Shelov's one.
Hughes hit the post on a downhill wrist shot. Nils Höglander had him beat clean. And then there were a ton, like, Connor Garland had a rush chance and had him Connor Garland had him beat twice and just couldn't quite find the handle. He had him beat on the wraparound, and he had him beat off the rush, and he just missed his spot. But he had him swimming. Oh, not to mention the deflection. It was the Besser one-timer try that got deflected by the Oilers defender. And, like, he literally was falling over backwards. Like, Pickard ain't the answer here. The Oilers are in real trouble in net. We knew that. But coming out of that game, like, it was not goaltending that held the Oilers in that. It was luck, without question. The Canucks were all over them. That was an unbelievable performance from a team that really played at a level we had not seen yet in this series.
All right, without further ado, let's open the whiteboard for today.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks for today, May 17th. And the headline is, of course, as mentioned, the Canucks beat the Oilers 3-2. Game 5 of the second round at Rogers Arena. JT Miller scores the winner with 33 seconds left. The Canucks win yet another tense, thrilling, memorable playoff game on this run. They are now one win away from advancing to the conference finals for the fourth time in franchise history. One win away from crushing Edmonton's Stanley Cup aspirations. And as you just said, Drancer, and it bears dwelling on a little bit more, that was also the best performance of the playoffs for the Vancouver Canucks.
By a
right?
mile.
And we knew they needed to step up their game. Rick Tocchet did the lineup shuffle to try to give them the opportunity to step up their game, and they did exactly what they needed to do. There's so many different ways we can kind of attack this one. We can talk about the penalty kill and, you know, Connor McDavid and the way they were able to hold him in check. But I think the biggest one for me is simply there were no passengers, right? We had so much conversation
Heck
about
no.
the passengers. Last night there were zero passengers for the Canucks in that Game 5 win.
Absolutely none. No, Phil DiGiuseppe, Neil Zaman stepped up in a major way.
Yep.
This was a total team effort. I thought Tyler Myers was immense.
Absolutely.
Physical beast in that game throughout, and then had that great touch. Now, he was trying to go high flippy in the neutral zone, but it was a tight play along the wall. I don't think he quite got all of it. And I don't think that puck ever stopped rolling. Like, I really think there was something, some magic beans in that vulcanized rubber. It was just bouncing all over the place. Really tough finish, by the way, by JT Miller. It looks easy from the press box. It looks easy from the television. It looks like the net's empty, but just like puck bouncing and wobbling all over the place. Have to beat the fastest skater on the planet mm-hmm. to the net, no problem. And then, honestly, Pickard, now granted, Pickard had an actual shot at a desperation paddle stop there. Like, he really did. You also had to put the puck where the goalie wasn't. Although, man, I don't know if that's that big an ask, given Oilers' goaltending. No, it really was. That was a really tough play by Miller, who also just had a really successful night against McDavid. McDavid didn't look like he had legs as that mm-hmm. game went along. You know, whether or not that's all the minutes catching up or whether there's sort of an injury or something to it. You know, Miller plays almost 10 minutes head-to-head against McDavid. It's a hard match. The Canucks outshoot the Oilers 4-2 in those minutes. They score a goal. And, you know, even with all of that said, we talked about it yesterday, the feeling in this series that after every win, destiny is knocking. And after every loss, like, the cruel whims of fate feel like they're just outside your door, right? For all that McDavid looked bottled up, non-impactful relative to his usual immortal standard, right? 5 minutes to go, he still has an excellent look.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the high slot, and Seelovs has to fight it off. It's a pretty difficult save, right? He still hit a post. Like, the Canucks limited McDavid as effectively as they've done in any game this series, maybe with the exception of Game 3. I thought they had a really good defensive performance in Game 3, aside from the second period. And he still had chances to break that game open, which is just a reminder, like, there's still work to do this weekend on Saturday night at Rogers Place in Edmonton. But yeah, a total team effort, and Tocchet got the response, right? Tocchet got that response again, right? Criticizes the passengers on the team.
Yep.
What's the result? The best Canucks performance we've seen, I'd argue, all season, given the stakes.
Well, and to be what makes it really impressive is that they had their most dangerous offensive game easily in the playoffs while simultaneously holding Connor McDavid in check.
Yep.
Right? Like, to do both of those things at once is what's really impressive about it. And just to go into some of the numbers for Connor McDavid specifically, with him on the ice at 5-on-5, Canucks outshot them 8-3, right? So only 3 shots on goal for the Oilers when Connor McDavid was out there at 5-on-5. The Canucks outscored them 2-0. The Canucks controlled 83.5% of the expected goals metric per natural stat trick. Now, we can poke holes in the expected goals on a game-by-game sample thing, right? I think that's fair to do. Per Paul Peduti at Adjusted Hockey, that's the lowest share of expected goals Connor McDavid has had since November 2nd, 2019.
Oh, my God.
390 games ago. He had 16.5% share of expected goals. Last time he had that number lower than that, 390 games ago, November 2nd, 2019. So that's like a historically poor offensive play-driving night for Connor McDavid,
dude,
authored by the Canucks.
Dude, I was 2 months. I'd only been back in Vancouver to cover the Canucks for 2 months.
That's pre-pandemic.
The coronavirus was 2 months away from being observed.
Like, that's a long time ago.
Donald Trump was president. Holy cow. Holy cow.
So it's been a long, long time since he was as ineffective at 5-on-5 in a game as he was last night. And again, Wow, I'm glad I got to break this to you on air.
Do you know what the number one movie was that weekend?
What was it?
Frozen 2.
Still number one in my head. Yeah. Unabated.
Oh, man. Let it go.
Well, that's Frozen 1.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Frozen 1.
Okay,
Come on.
Okay, dad legs.
What you would say if it's Frozen 2 is we're about to go into the unknown here, potentially. But anyways.
Catchy kind of sounds like the White Lotus theme.
There you go. Anyway, so really just an incredible 5-on-5 performance against Connor McDavid. And, you know, you highlighted JT Miller and his line rising to that challenge, which, of course, they did. Obviously, it's always a total team effort as well. But, you know, that's the 5-on-5 side of things. Then they go and they kill off all 5 Oilers power play opportunities. As you said, 4 full ones because of the 4-on-4 time in there. But still, and, you know, I know we can do this exercise of, like, go back into the past when we were watching, you know, the late period Bruce Boudreau Canucks and try to explain to someone what would happen with this team. But go back like 18 months to like November, December 2022 and try to tell people that in 18 months time, the Canucks penalty kill would be shutting down the historic Oilers power play in a pivotal game in the second round of the playoffs. Like, that's an incredible, incredible accomplishment for that group.
And the Oilers power play only generated 9 attempts in 7 minutes and 40 seconds of work. I mean, again, they did hit a post, so it's not like, I don't think we have to.
You're probably not going to go 0-for-5.
No,
without, you know, and like without a little bit of luck playing in your
100%
into your hands.
But
there.
They didn't even have that many like withering So what I love about the Oilers' power play, and I could talk about this all day because I think it's what Tocchet aimed to do with this group and
100%.
Couldn't quite get there. But one of the things that they do so well that makes them so good is that they, because they're constantly in motion, right? The way the Tocchet wants this power play to be, in which, for whatever reason, it's never quite worked out for this group. Because they're always in motion, it's not that the motion drives the scoring chances they generate, although it does. What really makes them special is that the motion means that no one's feet ever stops, which means they always have a step and win every retrieval.
Mm.
Like, that's why they're so good. And I still thought they, like, did that in terms of blundering the Canucks for large stretches when they were on the power play. It's just that they were not getting inside with the same regularity. Teddy Bluger caught a variety of backdoor seams, seam pass attempts, was able to sort of interfere with them. And then one other thing I do think the Oilers were trying to do more of is they were trying to shoot more through layered traffic. They were literally trying to shoot more from the perimeter on Shelovs. And I think it worked to some extent, but also I do think it made them a little more perimeter oriented. And I don't know that they should adjust what they do to try and deal with or like expose, quote unquote, a weakness in Vancouver's third string netminder who's been on an incredible heater here. Like, you just got to do what you do well.
100%. When you have like a historically good power play, yeah. Like don't switch it up based on the goalie's shot profile data. You know what I mean? Just do what you're best at. Do what has made you excellent over the last couple of seasons.
I want to shout out a guy who no one's talking about today because I just thought it was a really impressive workmanlike performance, and he was a big part of some of the best things that Vancouver did. But I'm coming out of every game now just thinking that Brock Besser is like just about the perfect playoff winger you could ever have. Like, the way he uses his stick now is new in his bag, right? And I don't just mean the deflections, although obviously that's a big part of it. I mean, like, other forwards or defensemen will try and put it past him, and not that he's like Dreisaitl, who's, you know, unbelievable, mm-hmm. But he's the next most likely to take a puck in the air or puck at waist level and like control it in Vancouver's favor of anyone on the ice right now. It just feels like he's impossible to get by every single engagement with the Oilers. And I thought it was a huge factor in the game last night.
I know Harmon had the big piece up at the Athletic.
Yeah, go check that out.
Which
great
fantastic,
stuff.
Breaking down how they kept McDavid in check. But there's some Besser examples in there where just like perfect positioning, exactly where he needs to be, when he needs to be there to break up the play.
Me and Harmon couldn't shut up about Brock Besser last night. We were just like, what's going on? This is unbelievable.
He's been phenomenal. And
he's
again,
so good.
To do the kind of hindsight thing, we often frame it in like, can you imagine, you know, he wanted out, they were trying to shop this guy. I'd flip that around. 31 of NHL teams could have acquired this guy for a song.
Yeah.
And now, like, imagine watching this and thinking, like, oh, man, we could have had this guy doing this type of stuff in the playoffs on our team.
Him and Garland.
And Garland.
And JT. I mean, you know, like, I'm not going to go so far as to say that this is the island of the misfit toys or anything, but like there's a lot of Canucks players making a massive difference against a preseason Stanley Cup favorite who could have been acquired for 80 to 75 cents on the dollar and maybe less.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as recently as like 12 months ago. Because, you know, with JT, you probably have to go to like back 18 months.
Yeah.
But with Besser and Garland,
Last summer.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. And now look what they are doing right now.
Can we talk about Phil DiGiuseppe?
Yeah, we got to mention Phil DiGiuseppe. I mean, what a night, and the interview after and talking,
yeah,
getting choked
TNT
up.
Yeah, the TNT interview was amazing.
Absolutely phenomenal.
What a great moment. Can't not be so, so excited for a story like that and a guy like that. And
and beyond the goal, he just played really well. Like, he was incredible.
Yeah.
He was really, really good last night.
No. Phil DiGiuseppe took over that game. And what I mean by that is not that Phil DiGiuseppe personally took over that game, although I think there's an argument for it. He only played 8:30 at 5-on-5 at the end of the day. But in that second period, okay, it was DiGiuseppe coming out and like running Bouchard a couple times and getting the Canucks forecheck going that sort of changed the dynamic of that entire game, because all of a sudden, you know, fourth line comes on and just wrecks, cuts the Oilers' attack off at the stem. And until that moment, like, the Canucks settled into the game in the last 8 minutes of the first, I guess. But it's not like they were still turning the puck over too often up high at the offensive blue line, feeding the Edmonton scoring chance game. And the Oilers were setting up shop pretty consistently and owned the puck the way they had for most of the series. Like, 5 minutes to go in the second or in the first period, I'm thinking, man, this looks an awful lot like everything else we've seen in this series. And it was DiGiuseppe in the fourth line that flipped that. They came out, they started to win and cut off the Oilers' breakout at the stem. And then all of a sudden you had the next line up, and they're at an advantage, and they press that advantage. And then the next man up, next line up, press that advantage. And the Canucks just didn't relent. And they did not relent. The game then, if DiGiuseppe personally ties it off exactly that sort of like pressurized opportunity, right? Close play at the line, the turnover forced by Amon, by Evan Bouchard, DiGiuseppe with a nice finish. And the Canucks just kept taking that. They just kept the Oilers bottled up in their own end of the rink for much of the remainder of the game. And eventually the Oilers cracked under that pressure. They had the bounce go against them or a great play go against them. I mean, it was a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. There was a lot going on that play.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. Like, that's it. That's the game. I literally don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the Canucks' fourth line broke that game open for Vancouver in a variety of ways. Now, we get to add, right? Because what have we always called Phil DiGiuseppe on this program?
What?
Training camp hero.
It's true. Now playoff hero.
Now playoff hero.
Stanley Cup playoff hero.
Congratulations
and
to a guy who's worked real hard to stick around in this league.
And I know Bick made this point on the postgame show, right? Like, there's a hallmark of lengthy, and then we're not quite there yet. I wouldn't, like, my rule is you can call it a run when you make the conference finals, right? That's when you can, like, look back and be like, remember the playoff run of X year? You got to make the conference finals to do that. But one of the hallmarks of runs in the Stanley Cup playoffs is bottom six guys stepping up and having their moments, right? And I know Bick made the shout out to Tyler Motte in the bubble, doing what he did against the St. Louis Blues in the bubble. Now Phil DiGiuseppe had that moment, right? Had that classic kind of bottom six, unexpected, unsung hero type of moment in that game, a massive game. And then obviously with the family element added to it, not possible to feel better for Phil DiGiuseppe than we do right now.
The officiating was bad. Okay, The charge called on Elias Pettersson was wild in that none of us have really seen charging ever called in that instance. Interference would have made sense. He didn't quite keep his elbow tucked, so elbowing could have made sense, but charging?
It was a weird one.
Now, jumping into a guy, I guess, qualifies as charging, as you know, I furiously looked up the rule book during the flow of play. But, you know, there's sort of a second paragraph about distance traveled. I'm not sure if that's, like, adding to the definition.
That is, okay. So, to put on my lawyer hat here for a second, the rule says a charging penalty should be called if a player charges, skates into, or jumps into a player.
Mm-hmm.
So those three things.
And there's, like,
Then it says, the second paragraph is describing what charging in that first paragraph means.
Right.
So you charging say the first... is a separate category from jumping into or running into.
So you would say the second paragraph governs the first.
The second paragraph is there's three things that can be assessed a charging penalty.
Got it. Okay.
Charging, running into, or jumping. And then it's like, by the way, this is what charging means.
Yeah.
Not the charging penalty, the charging we were talking about in the first paragraph, if that makes sense.
We're giving a rule book that needs a ton of work a little too, like, you know what I mean? It's like, this isn't the Magna Carta.
The rule is also ridiculous on its face because you're allowed to skate into people in hockey.
Yes.
It's called body checking.
Yes.
So you can't have that in the rule book and be like, oh, well, hey, that's charging. But, like, well, no, it's not.
Are you allowed to leave your feet?
Typically, no.
No, but are you allowed to leave your feet in anticipation of a guy skating into
you? That's an interesting semantic definition, which you don't or debate, 100%. Right?
But
does that qualify as jumping into somebody if they're the one skating into you?
I have no problem.
I don't know.
I have no problem with that being called a penalty. Like, reverse hits are good weapons for undersized players to keep in their back pocket so that they get the respect a larger player would along the wall. Like, I think that's important for, like, Pettersson's player safety, frankly, right? I think it's important for Pettersson's ability to generate. But I have no problem with that being assessed a penalty. I just don't know that it's charging. I would have rather seen it be called interference. I hated the garbage being thrown on the ice. Like,
yeah, don't do that.
For the most part, this series has gone Vancouver's way by the whistles. Like, guess what? The Edmonton Oilers were going to have a game where they got more than 2.5 power play opportunities.
And the Canucks survived it.
And the Canucks... Yeah, exactly. You knew going into this 7-game series that there was at least going to be one game where the Oilers got to run a power plays. Like, be an adult about it. Just boo. And boo Nathan Fielder with the hilarious sign.
That was very good.
Keep
the right guy in the right moment in the crowd right
keep
there.
Keep your garbage to yourself.
so good.
I don't often do this, but did you see the Taj tweet about the garbage?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Should I?
I'm going to keep my lips sealed. You read it.
Should I dare to read a...
go for it.
Because my friends have been, like, sharing it with me. I've, like, been getting it sent to me by, like, non-hockey friends. You know what I mean? Like, normie friends.
Yep.
The tweet was that, oh, man, I really should have pulled this up before. The tweet was, they would never do that in Edmonton because they need to save the trash to give to each other on Christmas. Which, like, obviously, I'm a much bigger fan of Edmonton and don't endorse that type of joke, but also it made me laugh a lot.
That's a pretty good joke. Sometimes you got to get your jokes off. There's no doubt about that one.
Really
okay, there's so much more to get into from the game last night, but we do just have to hit some other notes here in the whiteboard. Broadsheet, Rick Dhaliwal reporting on Halford and Brough. I shouldn't say of course, but as you might guess, Ilya Mikheyev, of course, who was a healthy scratch last night, although they also say he's banged up day to day. Dhaliwal says the Canucks want to move Mikheyev in the summer, but also says a buyout isn't happening. Of course, 2 more years left, I believe $4.5 million AAV.
But buyout wasn't happening last year until it was either.
$4.75 million AAV for Ilya Mikheyev. With his track record of scoring goals or not scoring goals this year, very difficult. He also has a 12-team no-trade clause list he can submit, so that's going to be a tough one.
But savings are decent, though.
On a buyout?
Yeah, you save 3.6, so all but $1 million of his AAV in year one. Save 2.6 the next year, so that's more than half the subsequent season at the cost of 1.5 and 1.5 in a couple of years where you're, you know, hopeful anyway that the cap is high enough that doesn't crush you.
Mm-hmm.
Although, obviously, compounding with the Oliver Ekman-Larsson buyout, it becomes a little bit problematic.
I definitely wouldn't rule it out, though, a buyout for Ilya Mikheyev.
The injury stuff is odd. Like, hard for me to hear without sort of reacting with skepticism, given that he participated in the rinse skate. I'm not trying to, like, cast aspersions. It's just, you know, when I see a guy get worked out with the scratches, it's hard for me to believe that he's not a healthy scratch, right? Like, why would you do a strenuous activity with an injured player? So that one is tough for me to square. The Jeremy Colleton thing,
yep.
I think worth pointing out, like, hey, Pod Coles and DiGiuseppe have spent time playing for him. Niels Amon have spent time playing for him. Niels Hoglander spent time playing for him. Archer Seeloves. Like, to some extent, this surprising news that came down yesterday, I thought in some ways could be seen to have shaped the game a little bit, right? And so, obviously, a big one. I've just been, like, asking around and checking in. You know, I do think the idea of, like, a terminations probably overfitting exactly what's going on. It sounds like there's some openness in line with what Dan Murphy's reported on both sides to find a resolution if there's like an agreement that these two sides can come to on a price point. So hopefully they can, because I think Colton's done good work.
By all accounts, he's done a fantastic job.
In fact, by the team's own account.
Yeah, exactly. He's done a really, really good job. One other thing to add in the broadsheet here. Tim Peel, former NHL official, tweeting, says, hearing Connor McDavid is dealing with an injury and Zach Hyman is banged up as well. Goes on to say every team has injuries, but this will be a challenge for the Oilers if they are to beat the Canucks. So there it is from Tim Peel. Take that for what it's worth. He says he's hearing Connor McDavid is dealing with an injury and Zach Hyman is banged up as well.
Gambling odds?
Well, just a note on the lineup thing. Canucks are going to have an optional practice at Rogers Arena at 12:15. Hard to imagine any lineup changes. We had this text come in and it made me crack up earlier. Talkett told Foot last night to send the puzzle to the laminator. It's complete, because the lineup sure responded to the lineup juggle from Rick Talkett. So you got to expect it's the same. But Demko watch very much on, right? And I know Rick Dolly also said like he's not hearing setback because he didn't skate yesterday. So is he on the ice today? What does he do on the ice today? If there's any possibility of a Game 7 appearance, if necessary, for Thatcher Demko, today I think will tell us a lot about whether or not that's possible.
100%. And we need to see it. I mean, I was surprised that he didn't skate yesterday for sure, if he was going to be an option in this series. Good to hear that he's progressing, though. I saw, by the way, so playoff odds.
Yep.
Just I saw
64% that 64% chance per Dom's model.
80% according to history, though, right? When the home team wins game five, they go on to win the series 80% of the time. So that discrepancy, you know, once again, like I saw a New York Rangers fan make the joke about Dom's model. Having been eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs, the Carolina Hurricanes playoff Stanley Cup chances are down to 20%, right? Like, there are certain teams of such that do the things that Dom's model values so well that they're like additionally high on them, and that sort of explains why the model is still so high on their chances. The Canucks are plus 165 road underdogs, which is pretty significant going into game six. Oilers minus 200.
Well, yeah, we can talk about the game six outlook in the next segment, because I think it's going to be a fascinating one, and 100%. I understand why the odds are what they are, but yeah, that is pretty significant.
That is pretty significant. So if you want to get in some value there, you can do so. Also notable to me that the Edmonton Oilers are still only plus 150 to win the series. So the Canucks are favored to win the series. Obviously, they're one win away from getting it done. But the implied probability, like, so history would say that the Oilers would win this series from this situation 20% of the time. Dom's model says the Oilers would win the series 36% of the time. Vegas implied probability at 40%.
Wow.
So Oilers still getting a ton of respect from the
Bucks. Interesting. All right, we can look ahead more to game six in the next segment. Ryan Clark from ESPN, the man himself, is going to join us at noon. So always looking forward to chatting with Ryan Clark. Keep your text coming in as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we'll continue to break down game five. Look ahead to game six next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.